Coming up on Tech News Today, you might lose your internet, but you won't. We'll explain why. Also, App Store corrupting apps, Cisco hijacks your router, and why George Lucas predicted the Higgs field. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, July 5th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. Check out Pond5 at pond5.com, and for 25% off this month, use code TWIT25. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
This is the show that keeps you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world.
I'm feeling a little weird about that intro. Something was wrong.
Puts them in context for you. Sarah Lane on vacation, I thought.
No, it's me, Sarah Lane.
We'll resolve this in a minute. Let's just stick to the plan and do the top 10 stories in the news fuse. Starting July 9th, anybody who hasn't purged the DNS changer malware from their computer will likely lose the ability to resolve domain names. Estonian police and the U.S. FBI seized 100 servers back in November when they arrested 6 malware makers responsible for DNS changer. They kept the servers going for a while, though, to help the infected get uninfected. That effort ends Monday.
WikiLeaks started publishing over 2 million emails from 680 entities related to Syria, including ministries of presidential affairs and other political figures. In a statement, Julian Assange said, "The material is embarrassing to Syria and to Syria's opponents." WikiLeaks says that the data it received is more than 100 times the size of Cablegate.
It's huge! Many declared ACTA dead on Wednesday. The European Parliament voted against the controversial treaty, which attempts to harmonize copyright law across borders. The vote was decisive, only 39 in favor versus 478 against. 165 cowards abstained. The treaty came under criticism for the secrecy around its negotiations and the inflexibility toward copyright law. And the treaty still could be ratified by the 8 other countries who signed the agreement, including the United States.
Yeah, that coward party, they don't really say much. An update.
They stick to their guns.
An update to the Apple App Store may be responsible for corrupted apps. Instapaper's Marco Arment published a post saying that after he released an update to his app, he received many complaints that the Instapaper app kept crashing. Arment noticed that at least 20 other apps were facing the same issue, including GoodReader. Now, GoodReader says that they point the blame at Apple pushing out damaged binaries. Reinstallation of the apps has solved some of the issues.
Microsoft engineer Terry Zink posted to his MSDN blog details of a botnet that uses Android devices to send spam. He wasn't trying to trash Android, though. He's just trying to let people know about this. The botnet takes advantage of compromised Yahoo Mail accounts. He wasn't trying to trash Yahoo either, I don't think. Zink suspects users have downloaded corrupted apps, possibly a corrupted Yahoo Mail app, from unauthorized sources in order to avoid paying for apps. Android users are advised to only use authorized stores like Google Play or the Amazon Store unless they are confident of the security of any app they're installing.
It's time to talk about a brand new AT&T phone. Motorola introduced its new Atrix HD without making a whole lot of noise. It runs Ice Cream Sandwich using a dual-core 1.5 gigahertz processor along with 1 gigabyte of RAM. Because this is the Atrix HD, it has an HD screen with a resolution of 1280 by 720, which is spread over a 4.5-inch display. The phone made its debut on Motorola's website, but there's no pricing or release date announced. And if you click the actual landing page links, they seem to be redirecting. So maybe this release was a bit premature.
Oops. I thought Sarah Lane was on vacation, but
nope.
It doesn't matter because we got Patent Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Or are they wars? At the request of Judge Koh, Apple and Samsung have dropped some claims against each other in advance of their July 30th trial. Meanwhile, the UK High Court ruled Wednesday that HTC does not infringe four of Apple's patents. Three of the patents, slide to unlock, multi-touch, and multilingual keyboard capability, were found invalid, partly due to obviousness. In a game of patents, you win or you risk invalidation of your asserted claims. That's the snappy phrase they say.
Want to get a Galaxy Nexus? That might be an issue. Apple posted a $95.6 million bond to enforce an injunction to ban the sales of the Galaxy Nexus phone. As a result, the phone isn't available in the Google Play Store right now, and the site says the device is coming soon. Google told All Things D that it is working on a software patch to avoid Apple patents.
Hey, do you have 19.8 million Korean won to spare?
In my couch.
It's $17,000 U.S. Because I need it to pick up Samsung's new 75-inch LCD TV, the ES9000, which has a 7.9-millimeter bezel. The almost invisible bezel is rose gold covered. So, hey, you know where all that money goes to.
Is that bigger than bombers?
I think it's bigger than a lot of things.
Okay.
Microsoft just won the rights to the domain names Xbox8.org and Xbox8.us. Okay, so does that mean Microsoft just ate happy? Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, Xbox 8? Some believe the 8, when turned on its side, reveals the next-gen Xbox will be called the Xbox Infinity. Others think this could be about the 8th anniversary of the 360. Still, others don't care because no product is available yet.
I think that sums it up brilliantly. Let's take a moment and thank our sponsor, Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. I use it, and I think you should try it. You can try it absolutely free. You don't even need to put in a credit card or anything. You just go to squarespace.com, you create your blog name, and you're off and running. They have great tools for laying out a beautiful-looking website very easily, WYSIWYG format. You can get under the hood and tweak the code if you want to, but you don't have to. And this month, they really are emphasizing the fact that they're giving a screaming deal with domain registration, and then mapping it to your Squarespace account is completely integrated within the sign-up process. If you sign up for an annual account, it makes setting up a site easier than ever and saves you money because you get that domain for free, and then you get to keep the domain. It's yours. It's not Squarespace's. Squarespace is still giving you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts this month. For example, 10% off your first month on monthly plans, 10% off your first year on annual plans. Pay for 2 years, you get 10% off 2 years. The more you buy, the more you save. But you get 10% off when you use the code TNT7. So like I said, go try their blog import tool if you've got a blog already to see what your blog looks like. There's no risk to it. You don't have to give them a credit card. You don't have to commit to anything. Just go to Squarespace, sign up, import that blog, see what it looks like. If you like it, keep it, and use that offer code TNT7 to get 10% off your first purchase. Don't forget about that free domain registration. If you do sign up for the annual plan subscription, that's very convenient. Squarespace.com, offer code TNT7, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, we're going to dig deeper into some stories with Sarah. You're not Sarah Lane.
No.
Why are you pretending to be Sarah Lane, Justin Robert Young?
I've been unmasked. It's me, Justin Robert
the
Young.
The audio listeners had no idea.
No. Imagine, her surprise when in France as she's getting bombarded on Twitter.
Hey, where did you grow the beard? Nice Doctor Whoville shirt.
Yeah.
What are
snazzy
these
sport
about?
Coat, Sarah.
Well, Justin, thank you for joining us. Of course, co-host of NSFW Show, iTricks.com, mm-hmm. Weird Things
Weird
Podcast.
Things Podcast, yep.
Always good to have you along. Let's start with a little rumor action.
Let's go back to the rumor mill, you know, where all kinds of great stuff comes out. All right.
And not Xbox The Ocho.
No, not The Ocho. But the reason why this is getting a lot of press again is because this rumor will never die, because Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal say, now, Apple's working on a 7-inch tablet with a lower res screen than the new iPad. Wall Street Journal is citing component suppliers. They're saying it's going to be either announced in October or it'll show up by the year's end. And get this, its price would be competitive with something called the Kindle Fire and the Galaxy Nexus 7.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because it's a 7-inch tablet, so it'll be about the same. All right. Justin.
Yeah.
Is Apple going to pull the trigger? 7-inch iPad?
Yeah, I think, obviously, we've seen enough smoke to believe that there's fire. The real, and not the Kindle Fire, ladies and gentlemen. Tip your waitress.
He'll be here one day.
They won't
day.
Be here all week with that joke.
No, I'll be here today. But the key difference is I don't think Apple does this unless they can make money, which Google and Amazon don't on their devices. You know, the fact that this is coming from component suppliers makes sense because, I mean, this is the reason why Tim Cook has the CEO job. It was his strategy in terms of cornering the market on certain components that would make a 7-inch tablet like this work for them in a way that it doesn't work for anybody else. And, you know, for Apple, and we're going to get to this in the next story with the App Store, you know, this is the key difference compared to anything else that comes out, compared to Android, compared to any traction that Windows Mobile will get or whatever the Windows Mobile operating system is called now or forever. Windows 8, you know, Xbox.
Windows Phone, the Ocho.
Yes, the Ocho is the App Store. And the more they can get that out there, the more they can have people using these devices and having developers have a bigger pie to play to, the better Apple's mobile strategy is going to be. So, I mean, I think it makes sense. I just think that they won't do it unless they can make money on it because they don't do hardware things unless they can make money on it.
As far as veracity goes, I think we're definitely going to see a 7-inch tablet from Apple. Probably within the next few months. After years of following Apple rumors, people who've been doing this for a long time, they know it's like you start with the leaks from the blogs and the Digitimes, and you don't believe those. You wait to see if you get the medium level links from the 9to5 Max and the Boy Genius reports. Check that off. They've reported this. Then you get the Wall Street Journal weighs in, and now it's like you have enough triangulation to go, okay, this is probably for real.
Yeah.
And so I think we'll see one. The reason I was resistant to believing this for a long time is because of the insistence by Steve Jobs that they would never make a 7-inch tablet because it was too small, right? Now, Apple has a history of saying, we will never do an iPod with video because nobody wants to watch video on a small screen like that. And then turning around and going, aha, we figured it out.
Yes.
And now we've done it. So I do wonder what the spin will be when they come out with a 7-inch tablet. Is it going to be a new feature that allows you to see things bigger? Will it come with little extensions for your fingers to make your fingers smaller?
Because,
you know, that's what Steve Jobs' quote, right? Well, he's like, you need to bundle it with sandpaper.
File down your fingers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I guess my question here is this the iPad scaled down, or is this the iPod scaled up and maybe looking at what is the future for the iPod brand?
See, now when
the iPod Touch with the 7-inch.
Touch maybe, and this is more optimized for mobile gaming.
I think it's the iPad, but that's a good question.
When Apple,
very little difference between the two.
When Apple was introducing iOS 6, somebody noticed that the components of your apps will automatically arrange themselves, not just widgets or icons, but because if a 7-inch device shows up, that's going to mess up resolutions. If you have a 9.7, a 7-inch, and a larger iPhone, you have to figure out how your elements are going to be on your app. So because of this tiny feature that, like, when they show up that iOS 6 and they have, like, 100 features, this idea that these elements would arrange themselves, it gave people the idea, okay, wait, maybe we don't have to keep rewriting apps all the time if it's iOS 6 compatible. So this would work, and Apple's really famous for cannibalizing its own sales. They don't mind that. They go, if we're going to lose out sales, we would rather take the money. iPod Mini, and then there was iPod Nano. They just kill their own things. It doesn't make a difference to them as long as they have the App Store. They're getting their money. They're getting the money on the hardware. And it's been years. So they've been making the iPad and the iPod Touch for so long. They're probably getting a huge discount on these devices, that whereas ASUS has to, like, break even with Google, Apple's going to make money.
Would it make sense that Apple would be doing this with the iPad as well as a larger iPhone at more or less the same time? I mean, both are rumors, but both are rumors to keep coming back up.
The larger iPhone is not that large. We're talking about a four inch screen. Remember, it's 3.5 inch
screen. But it still requires different treatment of the apps as far as how it scales to the display.
From the back end to say, okay, we're going to change all the screen sizes.
Right.
So, that's a very good point.
As part of a new family. I think, to me, the biggest question from Apple's point of view is, what is price point? I don't think they'd be getting into this market unless they had an answer for that to the consumer who is now used to paying $200 for these kind of devices, for a Kindle Fire or a Google Nexus. So my question is, you know, how much are they going to cost?
Comes with a coupon for cosmetic surgery, so you can whittle your fingers down to points.
File them
right down. Meanwhile, controversy over the Apple App Store being buggy, pushing updates that are corrupted. We got this pretty much from the Instapaper folks, from Arment, right?
Yeah, Mark Arment was pretty annoyed by this because he just updated his Instapaper application, and people are complaining it wasn't working. Obviously, over 20, I think it's 21 actual apps are affected.
Yeah, Arment listed other apps
right,
that
Good
he,
Reader's
he's
one
like,
of,
look, I found these other people have the same problem.
And he was suggesting on Twitter that nobody actually issue updates today because of the buggy app store. I mean, this basically goes to a general thing. I mean, we were talking about the botnet with Android as well. You have app markets and app stores and Windows stores and whatever you want to call these things, but you have this centralized, clean repository when it comes to apps, theoretically. Is this approach, I mean, this obviously is not, it's showing that it's not necessarily bulletproof. If this kind of stuff can happen, you know, is the walled garden approach something that we should be more wary of with something like this when the app store itself is screwing up the apps? Because this also was supposed to happen on the Mac app store.
It's a really good parallel. On the one hand, you've got the Android store that says, we don't lock you in, you can sideload apps, but you might be part of a botnet if you're not careful.
Yes.
Right? We had that story in the news fuse. On the other side, we have Apple. It's like, we control everything, but if we mess up, it messes it up for that app, and it's the only way to get the app.
They need to aggressively be in front of this, Apple does, because the App Store is their great advantage. It is the ecosystem that keeps you locked into iOS. I know for me, it allows Apple to develop their own features on their OS slower than, let's say, Android, because they can rely on the fact that the App Store is there to kind of fill in the cracks, and you can always customize and get exactly what experience you want, more so than on other phones. So they need to be very aggressive about this to continue to prove to developers that this is the place that they want to spend their time and money focusing on, sometimes at the exclusivity of other options. And, you know, it's like as Far East teaches us, power resides where people believes it resides. If you do not have confidence in this platform, you will not develop or be as excited to exclusively develop for this platform.
Well, go ahead.
I mean, it's only a handful of applications. Consider the wide marketplace of apps in the App Store. So it can be like, okay, listen, now 20-some of them are kind of busted up, and all you got to do is keep hitting reinstall or something. But we have another 600,000 that are fine, or whatever the number is at this point. So, I mean, the idea that I would think Apple's not going to market or say anything about it as opposed to saying, just try to reinstall. It'll be like one thing in a discussion forum, I bet. Because I know Marco Arment, he can make some noise. And I've loved his application. I've used it for a long time. I even paid for it because there's a free
Shocker.
Version. I know. I paid $5 for the
Marco
app.
Appreciates that, yeah, I'm sure.
I really like it.
Hear
like
that, Marco?
We love
Just
your
saying.
App. Even though Safari has a very interesting clone of it. I think that this is getting a lot of press. I think this is going to just go away in a couple of days.
I know it probably will, but I think that, and this isn't a consumer issue. Like, I don't see this as something that they need to, you know, trot out Justin Long and talk about, like, on television or something. You know,
like App Store.
Yeah, but, like, to developers, I think that some point of contact or aggressively solving the problem is good, because there are things that you can kind of let go and let sort of get out there. For what the App Store means to iOS, you need to aggressively stamp out things like this, because these ideas kind of take root, you know?
I think Apple feels like, yes, we should definitely try to do this, but aggressively, probably not. We're the App Store. People want to be here. So we should do our due diligence, be responsible, and figure this out. But we got 600,000 apps in there, and we can't handhold every one of them. And bugs happen.
They do.
You know,
they
so,
do.
I mean, that's the other thing is, this isn't unexpected in the world of computers and developing, that every once in a while something like this is going to happen. Apple should make sure that it doesn't happen again. And I think the frustration is there isn't a lot of communication back from any of these companies, from Google, on the Android platform. I don't know how – I haven't heard as many complaints about Windows Phone, but it is a more limited experience to get into. And Apple is notorious for not talking to developers. And it's just sort of you submit your app and wait and hope that it shows up in the App Store.
I guess maybe it's not even a communication thing. It's like what you said. If it happens once, whatever, things go wrong. Twice – now it's a problem. And if it becomes a serial problem, then I think it damages the core DNA of the advantage that the iOS App Store has.
All right. You're going to lose your internet connection Monday. You may hear that headline somewhere.
Panic! Panic!
You're probably not going to lose your internet connection on Monday, but here's what's going on with DNS Changer. We talked about it briefly in the news fuse. November 8th, 2011, the Estonian police and the U.S. FBI put in place Operation Ghost Click. Love that name. Arrested six individuals who are operating a company called Rove Digital. They were behind a botnet that
was really nasty. It's generally referred to as DNS changer. It goes under a lot of names. But it infected computers and changed the way the computers do DNS routing. So replacement DNS servers were set up in three different areas around the world. And those computers that were infected would look up any website that you typed into a browser at those servers instead of the actual domain name servers. That meant that the guys who were operating the botnet could redirect any web page to an actual malware page without you realizing it, without you knowing it. Now, when they shut this down, they could have just shut down the servers, but that would have knocked hundreds of thousands of machines offline. So they've been doing an outreach program trying to get people to fix their computers so they don't lose their internet connection. It was an interesting experiment. They actually set up a nonprofit called Internet Systems Consortium that has been running since January, and they got an extension to continue to run until this coming Monday. And what that company has been doing is serving these pages, maintaining these servers, while the FBI and other sites, Google and Facebook, were actually detecting if you were infected and then serving you a page that said, hey, you were detected. A lot of security researchers were saying that's what Internet Systems Consortium should have been doing, is just giving you a splash page anytime you connected with information about how to fix. The problem is, it's a real difficult fix because this is a nasty piece of malware. To check if you're infected, you want to go to dcw.org/detect. That page will take you to a link that will, and there's different links based on different languages, that will allow you to see if you've actually got the malware at all. If you don't, you're done. You don't have to worry about it in case you're concerned. If you do have this malware on one of your machines, then you want to go to dcwg.org/fix. dcwg.org/fix describes the fixes you need to go through. Now, this is so nasty that one of the recommendations is to buy a new computer.
Yes.
They say, look, if you're about to buy a new computer anyway, don't try to fix the old one. Just
no.
Get your files off there, back it up, buy a new
computer. You're going to want to put your old computer on a wooden boat and push it out into a lake. Light it arrows toward it, cast it aflame.
That's from the Viking Security Company, right?
Yes. And then go buy a new computer.
If you want to save the computer, they still suggest you back up your files, which is always good advice anyway, and reformat the drive and reinstall the operating system. If you don't want to do that, there are some other fixes out there, but they say that the safest way is just to reformat the thing, because not only does it get really into your system in a way that's hard to get rid of, but it'll affect your routers as well.
I'm just kind of curious if this is going to be like the knee-jerk reaction on Monday when this news story will be out further. Like, if you've lost your internet connection today, buy a new computer. I mean, is that going to happen often? Are people going to be like, hey, I lost my connection today. You should buy another computer.
It's a great excuse.
I mean, like Windows 8. Yeah, it'll work because it doesn't have this.
And don't get me wrong. The folks at the website, dcwg.org, are not saying, just go buy a new computer. No. They're like not in the pockets of the retailers. They're just pointing out, like,
that
look,
we know.
If you were about to buy a new computer anyway, that's the easiest thing to do because this thing is really nasty. They do detail all the other fixes.
Yeah. And go use them.
Yeah, so go check it out, and definitely before Monday, if you are concerned, at the very least, go to dcwg.org/detect and try to figure out if you've been infected.
I'll tell you, it seems like a real ace detect tool.
It really is,
really,
spelled
really
correctly.
I think it is good to see that there is this kind of reaction, though. You know, and that Google and Facebook are
some of the security researchers were upset with the way it was handled. They said, look, you should have browned out, or you should have just shut them down, because more people would have fixed their machines faster if they just lost their internet connection. But I thought it was an interesting experiment in trying to educate people. Not sure how successful it'll be. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Pond 5, the world stock media marketplace. Now, maybe you want to make a movie now about the apocalypse that is happening, and you need a metronome shot to show that, you know, time is running down before Monday when the internet dies. Pond 5 is a great place for all those stock media things. You want shots of the fog rolling in over the Golden Gate Bridge? They got it. They pretty much have anything you can think of. Sand blowing off dunes, all that stuff. It's not just video, though. They also have photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, motion graphic templates. If you are a media maker, you got to check out Pond 5 because you get these legally. You can use them in almost anything you do. And it's affordable. It's a lot more affordable than going to some of these high-end places. So you're going to get high-end stuff. You're going to get high-quality stuff from a marketplace of individuals like you. In fact, if you're like, hey, I shoot a lot of stuff myself, you can sell it on Pond5 and get industry-leading royalties. You clip-on ties?
Yeah, no, koi ponds. Like, I'm shooting them all the time.
Ponds, yeah.
I'd like to sell that. Boom, Pond5.
There you go. Check it out. If you're a media maker working with video, images, or sound, go right now, pond5.com. Check it out. They have a special offer for our audience members, too. 25% off your purchase this month when you use the coupon code TWIT25. That's pond5.com. Use that coupon code TWIT25, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Well, we talked about the servers that were infected by the malware. Now let's talk about the routers that were infected by the opt-in service. On June 27th, Cisco pushed out a firmware update to three models of their routers, the EA3500, the EA4500, and the EA2700, that replaced your admin access with Cisco Cloud Connect. It only happened if you had opted in to automatic updates when you set up your router. But a lot of people do this because they're like, hey, it's safer to get auto updates and get the patches fast than to leave my router insecure. Cloud Connect allows you to administer your router from the cloud. So I can be on my laptop at home. It makes it easier. Yeah, you can do this anyway. You can set it up this way. But it makes it easier to access your router from the cloud, add devices. There's apps that go on mobile devices, make it easier to connect that app to the Wi-Fi network. Most of the people in the audience probably are like, well, you just type in the Wi-Fi password. How hard is that? Some people, that's more troubling than others. So this is supposed to make it easier. However, the biggest issue with this was not only the fact that a lot of people didn't like that they had to sign up for Cloud Connect to access their own router, but there were terms of service limiting you from using the service for porn or to infringe intellectual property, send spam, or send viruses. Now, the porn thing is arguable whether that should be in there. The others are just saying, hey, we don't want people to use this Cloud Connect service to break the law.
Yeah, but this is boilerplate.
How do they know? How do they know whether I'm using my router unless they're watching my traffic? Well, they actually had a part of their terms of service in the privacy section that said they would track your internet traffic for quality control purposes. So people put two and two together, said, hey, they're tracking my internet traffic over here for quality control. Then they're going to shut me down.
If I'm porn tubing it too much.
Yeah. What the heck, Cisco? I don't like this at all. Cisco has posted a blog post saying, well, first of all, they removed that privacy policy section. And second of all, they said Cisco Connect Cloud does not actively track, collect, or store personal info or usage data for any other purpose, nor is it transmitted to third parties.
I think boilerplate, you just nailed it.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
I mean, how many stories, and I would say between Buzz Out Loud and Tech News Today, are caused by some lawyer hitting copy C, copy V in something.
They're trying to cover their ass, right? They're like,
yes,
we're going to provide this service, which makes us liable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we need to make it clear that you can't use our service for illegal things.
So Cisco doesn't get sued by copyright owners.
And every good lawyer overprotects.
Well, I mean, if you've looked at the terms of service for iTunes, they use the same thing for Apple, for every Apple product, this is for iTunes, which drives me, it's hysterical. You're not allowed to use iTunes in regulating a nuclear facility.
Right. Yeah.
Because that makes sense.
I stopped immediately when I
read
that.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense for OS X, I guess, but iTunes, I don't know why exactly. Do you have
a
playlist?
There was that one time I was thinking about running a nuclear facility on a Maroon 5 playlist.
I know.
Doesn't work.
A new visualizer, perhaps, was your idea. But the thing is, it's just extra language, and it was also like a slow news day. Like, oh, look, Cisco's doing this. Okay, that's not such a big deal. But the thing about Cisco routers...
It wasn't a slow news day. No, I disagree with that. This has been cooking for a week, and people are very angry about it. And they're angry about it because the term said, we're going to track your traffic, and we're going to stop you from doing this. And the third element was that they pushed this to you without your permission. Now, it's one thing to give me security updates when I opt in and say, yeah, update my firmware. It's another to update my firmware and say, now you can't access your router anymore until you sign up for this third-party service. That's where I think it's not just the lawyers covering their ass, but they should definitely not do that. I know I opted into updates. I didn't opt into updates that make me sign up for a service. I think that's outside the realm
of
expectation.
And also, I mean, the target demo for something like this is people who are bitching about this. Like, you know, it's not my mom. My mom's not looking to log on online to alter the functions and functionality
and
of
Cisco routers. And these are consumer
routers.
But
yeah. No. They're consumer routers. But it's like people who care about this kind of stuff and people who want to get under the hood and want to have greater functionality theoretically would be the people that this is for. And when it falls on deaf ears there, none of this conversation was, well, I mean, obviously it's kind of awesome, but like it also sort of sucks. Like it was all just, this is terrible. I'm never going to use this. Please stop it.
Well, I mean, there's also, don't forget Cisco, where they bought Linksys, and there's all kinds of other open, you know, firmware you can put on these routers. Because if you are really irritated.
Well, DDWRT only works on one of these.
And there's Tomato, and there's other things out there.
They don't all work on these.
Well, they might be now, but after this kind of nonsense.
Somebody's going to be working on it.
This kind of stuff is, I mean, these are, I believe, some of the top of the line ones they actually had that they've changed the firmware on the router. So, I mean, arguably, I'm looking at terms of service issues, right? Did you sign up for this in the first place? I don't know. Maybe you did. Who knows what's on that? Who reads
it's not,
that thing?
Yeah, it's not about legality.
Right.
Obviously, Cisco is within the realm of the law.
It's just stupid. I mean, the thing is, if you can't use your router the same way, that's the problem.
No, it's a file this one under whoopsie doodle for Cisco.
And Cisco is backpedaling furiously. They've put the instructions up on their blog of how to install the previous version of the firmware. They're not trying to lock you into Cloud Connect anymore. They're saying, okay, calm down. don't start throwing our routers into a fire. Please buy our products.
Cisco just suck at consumer stuff. I mean, they were really like when Linksys was Linksys, they were fine.
Yeah.
When Cisco bought them, not so great. Cisco buys Flip. They screwed that up entirely.
Yeah.
They're really more for enterprise. So the more educated people are like, oh, yeah, you guys are just being stupid. We'll argue about this in the back channels. We're not going to argue about this on the internet. I'm just wondering, like, is Cisco any good at consumer, like, products anymore?
Well, they weren't this time.
No.
And Netgear is over on the sidelines cheering for Buffalo.
No, definitely. Yeah, and I think that this isn't the worst thing in the world that we've ever seen in terms of a boilerplate screw-up, you know, affecting consumers' opinions on them, but at the end of the day, it's certainly not great. And I think a lot of people might say EABD to the EA 3500 and the other models.
Yeah. On Tuesday's show, we had Nilay Patel from The Verge on, and he mentioned that he was working on a post about carriers and how they relate to innovation. He posted that up today.
Yes, and how they relate to innovation, not exactly a good thing.
Seems like a great place to work, The Verge.
That's what I hear.
In the headline, the post says carriers are the biggest threat to innovation. If you want to talk about screwing consumers, this is what apparently carriers do. Now, he's got some great points in here talking about getting a device and how long it takes to get onto the network. It could take up to 15 months, cost millions of dollars. Carriers are just demanding custom devices so they can lock in people to their networks. And then he cites the sad story of Palm. Building the Palm Pre Plus, easy for me to say, for Verizon. And Verizon's refusal to accept shipment, which left Palm with a device that couldn't run on other networks because Verizon is CDMA. You can't just swap out a SIM card. So Palm is sitting on a bunch of devices they couldn't use because Verizon was like, Motorola Droid is the way to go. So what's the answer for this? I mean, a long time ago, Steve Jobs was saying the carriers are impossible. We won't make a phone for a while. That was 2005. Verizon turned them down because Apple wouldn't show them the phone, said we wouldn't brand it. You're not putting your crap on here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this ourselves. Singular at the time was willing to do this kind of thing. Do you need monstrous companies like Apple to kind of bend people's arms for this? Or do you need more carriers out there? What's the solution to stop getting just awful phones?
The greatest movement we've seen on this issue, in my opinion, was Steve Jobs and the iPhone. It was the first time that I can remember seeing a manufacturer or a phone manufacturer say, listen, we're going to do whatever the hell we want. You can't do anything about it, and you for this gigantic price tag, you get the rights to have a massive hit. And thankfully, I think in terms of this issue specifically, the iPhone was and is a massive success.
And remember, the first iPhone was sold unsubsidized.
Yes.
That was a big stick for Apple because the carrier basically said, well, we're not going to subsidize it then. And Apple said, fine, you're going to want to subsidize it, though.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a big hit. It's
and
the arrogance of Apple.
Yeah. And in this particular issue, no matter what you think of the arrogance of Apple, this, I think, was something that we can all agree on in terms of if even just for this example, backing down the carriers, even if just a hair. You know, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it's a very complicated problem. You have a lot of entrenched players with the carriers, but if there aren't other companies that have the kind of stick that Apple did, you know, I don't know if you can you know, what the answer is. Because I don't know. I mean, like, having more carriers, like, yes, that's great. Like, you know, how does that happen, you know, without a just a seismic technological sea change?
I mean, Microsoft, when they introduced the Surface, they didn't mention anything about carrier partners. They didn't talk about that having a modem at all. Google came out with their Nexus 7. They don't have a carrier involved in that. It's just simply a Wi-Fi device. I mean, if these two monstrous companies can't pretty much tell the wireless carriers what to do, I don't know who else could. I mean, unless they... The crazy ideas are always like Google should just buy a phone company or somebody should buy one of these things or run their own MVNO. I mean, it just seems like right now the only thing it would take is just a crazy person at the top of a business to make this work.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, and Neely points this out in his article. The Apple came along and revolutionized the carrier industry for Apple.
Yes.
And what did the carriers respond with? We're going to double down on locking down the other devices.
Yeah.
And make sure that this does not spread. And so it had the reverse effect. Instead of actually opening things up, it actually locked things down and tighter, at least in the United States.
Yeah. Well, and there were other companies that would gleefully want to have their phones locked down because they wanted to get the push from the carriers that would make their particular, you know, handsets compete with the iPhone. You know, theoretically, they would have the extra steam behind them from the carriers because they're playing ball.
Neely's article doesn't end on a very hopeful note. It's like we all have Stockholm syndrome because we all keep shoveling money over to these carriers because we want to use phones. And so, you know, we've started to identify and even get partisan, like, oh, I love Verizon. I love the AT&T. You don't see the love the AT&T much in this region, but you do in other places. I think it is, you mentioned a seismic shift. I don't think a seismic shift is impossible.
No.
The problem is we have a limited area of competition because of spectrum. And if Verizon and AT&T control most of the spectrum, it's very hard for a competitor to get in. We saw what happened with LightSquared, where they had to go off into an area that overlapped with GPS, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
And now they've gone bankrupt and they're out. And I thought that was the most hopeful platform, which is somebody saying, we want to provide wireless data service wholesale.
Yeah.
Now it looks like Clear might try that. And Sprint might, you know, play along with that because Sprint and Clear are intertwined. And maybe that will work, or maybe Dish getting involved will be able to provide. Somebody needs to provide that wholesale access that says anybody can come in and innovate and play along so that companies like Ting, who have an innovative platform, can reach more people.
Yeah.
Because right now, it's almost as bad as cable television when you go to your choices in your area, like who actually provides service that'll cover me in my area and cover me in the places I need to go when I travel. It comes down to AT&T and Verizon almost every time for most people.
See, I mean, limited carriers or not, one of the huge issues are that you can't take a phone and move it to another network very easily. You can't go Verizon to AT&T. Even if they both have LTE, they're operating on different bands. So you can't just swap that out unless you have this massive phone.
It's not even
phone.
A policy thing. It's a technological
you physically,
thing.
Like, you cannot take your phone unless you, I guess, mod it. I mean, it's not going to work that way. And it's just, it works in Europe. You can have a standard and everyone's like, okay, these are the phones. There's only a set number of carriers. I can take this phone if I don't like what you're doing with our deals. I'll move over here, get a better deal. But we don't have that here. That's one of the big things because Verizon's saying, nope, this is ours. No one else can be here. AT&T, this is ours. Nobody else can be here. There's no – this is going to sound silly. There's no sharing. Like, we need to share this spectrum.
Yeah, but I mean, on as locked down as everything is, and it is, and I think Neely does a great job of illustrating exactly what this problem looks like. But if there is – like, great change comes from the opportunity of poor customer experience. I mean, I think a lot of the reason why the iPhone succeeded was initially, like, the idea of when Steve Ballmer, and he gets ridiculed for it now, the whole, like, who wants to pay $600 for a phone? Laugh, laugh, laugh. You know, that made sense in that time because we didn't think of phones as things that were great. You know, we thought of the phones as the thing that we do get for free because we deal with them.
Right.
They
and you
suck.
Look at desktops that cost $300. You're like, why would I pay twice that for a phone?
Absolutely. But the iPhone gave us an experience where it's like, wow, like there isn't every crazy, stupid, you know, NASCAR app or, you know, like a teen movie advertisement on there just because they decided to sell carrier advertisement. I think the same can be said for carriers if there is a technical you know, a right now, I think we have the beginnings of what could be, air to breathe in terms of a technical breakthrough. But
well, yeah, with people pushing towards prepaid, with people trying business models, this is coming to a head, and we always fear that when something like this comes to a head, that the power of the corporate entrenched interest will always win. And the fact of the matter, usually it doesn't. Consumer pressure almost always wins out.
Yes.
Without intervention from some other source. So I'm still hopeful. Mesh networking. That's what we need. Mesh networking. All right. Let's finish up with something light. Particle physics.
Should be easy.
On Wednesday, two seminars, as you probably know, two seminars at CERN described evidence that the Higgs boson has been discovered. Now,
gotcha.
That all depends on how you look at it. What they have found is evidence that a new boson has definitely been discovered, and they're almost certain it's the Higgs. So let's start with what the Higgs is. Go watch the videos that are out there on the net. The Verge collected a bunch of them that are great at explaining the Higgs. But the Higgs field is essentially the force. It Yes. surrounds us. It binds us. We are luminous beings, not this crude matter, until we interact with the Higgs field. Then we gain mass.
That's an actual quote from the presentation.
I don't know if it is or not, but I don't think it is. It's a field that imparts mass to particles based on their level of interaction. So electrons, photons, etc., depending on how much they interact with the Higgs field, which is like water. It's all around us, or air all around us, depending on whether you're a fish or a human. As you move through it, if you're something that interacts greatly, you're going to have more mass. Not gain more mass, but have more mass. If you interact lightly, then you're like a neutrino and you just pass through stuff. It's hard to detect because we can't detect the Higgs boson particle that creates the field directly. We can only detect its after effects. And the after effects are similar to the after effects of other particles. So let's say that two boats crash into each other, but you don't see them. You don't know what the boats are. 15% of the time when two boats crash into each other, you see a V-shaped wave, right?
Sure.
How do you... But you also know that if one of the boats is a Sea-Doo...
Yes.
That we should see a V-shaped wave 45% of the time. Well, one crash and a V-wave does not mean there was a Sea-Doo involved in the accident, right?
No.
You have to do multiple crashes over and over and over again.
A lot of Sea-Doos.
And if you see a V-shaped wave 45% of the time, the more data you have, the more certain you are that a Sea-Doo was involved in the crash.
Somebody got drunk on a Sea-Doo and
That's essentially what's going on with the Large Hadron Collider.
There
they keep crashing the particles together, and they keep seeing like, okay, we're seeing, looks like a couple of Z bosons. That could be this, but if we see it this percentage of the time, that's indicative of the Higgs. And there's multiple signals like that. Not just two Z bosons. So it's like you look at the wave, but you also look at the amount of wood in the water. And that lets you, there's another data point for the boat crash. For the particle crash, they think they see a pretty clear signal at around 126 giga electron volts. However, there's something called 5 sigma, which is the level at which they could call it, like we're absolutely certain it's a discovery. We discovered the Higgs. The data they have for the boson in question that they've detected is 4.9 sigma. So they can only say we've got a boson and it's behaving exactly like it should if it were the Higgs, but they're going to do more collisions based on the data they have to try to gather enough data to make it 5 sigma.
But this was enough that they could come out and talk about it.
Yeah, they've got enough evidence to say we have discovered a boson.
Yeah.
And it's new.
Yeah.
And we're pretty damn sure it's the Higgs.
I mean, like, it's like 99%.
Yeah.
Is the Higgs. So we're all going to cook up hot dogs. Do you guys want some?
We're also going to write our presentation in Comic Sans just to...
Wait, no, so I saw that at the end. Did they actually... That actually happened?
That happened.
It was written in Comic Sans, like the crazy Cavaliers owner when LeBron
And Stephen Hawking lost... That's not the presentation you're seeing on the video, by the way. That's a different video. But Stephen Hawking lost a $100 bet on this, so...
And he looks angry.
He's pretty sure that it's the Higgs. So it's... It's science, right? You always got to couch your terms carefully, but it's something to get excited about.
Well, there was a study about Comic Sans because it's so irritating to the eye, you actually remember it more.
Oh.
It was written in Comic Sans at this point. So if they wrote it in Helvetica, you'd be like, glaze over.
Yeah, exactly. But
because this is so...
Higgs what? I thought there was something about the Higgs. Wasn't he an alien?
Because this
Higgs
is such a light material. You need to have any help you can get to try to wrap your head around this. It's just like, if you're into physics, you love this stuff.
Once they find the Higgs boson, then they can plug it into the standard model of particle physics and lock that down a little more. And as Stephen Hawking said, it's almost disappointing that they found it. Because if they'd found something weirder, it would have changed all of physics. It would have been really exciting.
Yeah.
This is more like, what we thought was going on is pretty much what was going on.
Hey, guys, we're pretty smart.
We
High
were
five.
Right. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
A bunch of folks, including Gizmodo, reporting that researchers at the University of Calgary have come up with a way to use one thumb to operate your smartphone.
Yeah.
So you got a baby, cup of coffee, you're just flipping
well,
off
Calgary,
somebody while you're driving.
So, you know, you're trying to, yeah.
You're yelling, go Stampeders.
Exactly. You're trying to write your sign supporting Mika Kiprasov. And,
exactly. All of those things can be done with one hand. While you use their interface, it's the fat thumb smartphone interface. It takes advantage of the ability to press harder or softer to do the kinds of things you would normally do with multi-touch.
Yeah, one of the things it does, it actually checks out how much surface area of your thumb is on the device. So you can actually, unlike a lot of these devices these days, you can calibrate it. So you can tell it what's the least amount of pressure, the most amount. And it does things like pinch to zoom that you normally would have a much more difficult time with one hand. And the idea is, in the video, they make it almost comical, trying to have a cup of coffee and trying to use a device. It's infomercial style. It's amusing.
But we've all been there.
But yeah, it's happened. You're trying to figure this out.
Exactly.
But it's a nice little
There's got to be a better way.
And there is.
Implementation. All right, let's check the calendar very quickly. Congratulations to the UK on the launch of YouView Internet TV service. It combines Freeview, the free over-the-air service in the UK, with on-demand content, and it has been formally launched. Also coming up July 8th, the Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference kicks off, runs through July 12th. If they have any announcements left after this past month, you might hear about
it. The Worldwide Partners no longer are there because they come out with their own hardware.
Yes.
Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Yeah, that's where they assuage everybody. Don't worry. The Surface won't be successful. It'll be fine.
We're almost positive.
Let's start with a voicemail about at least one theory why carriers don't update Android to the latest versions.
Hi, TNT crew, and hi, guest presenter. Andrew Draper here from the UK. So I'm listening a day behind, so it's your 3rd of July, but you're on holiday, so happy 4th of July holiday. Hang on, 4th of July, Independence Day. Mm-hmm. Didn't we once own you? Never mind.
Yeah, we illegally
ringing
separated.
About the ice cream sandwich only being on about 11% of phones, and why don't carriers update more quickly? Is it just that if I can show you a phone with the new jelly bean on and you've only got ice cream sandwich on yours or gingerbread, then you're more incentivized to buy? They just want you on an outdated phone, so you buy a new one, I would think. Anyway. That's my thoughts. Bye.
That is one theory, is that they may not mind that the updates happen slowly because it will encourage you to want to buy a new phone.
I just think for any and all reasons, including the stuff that we were talking about, they really don't care about customer service. Like, I don't know if it's even like a malicious thing.
Yeah.
They just don't like that's it's time, money and hassle to do it.
They've already got you, so...
Yeah, so it's like, well, I mean, whatever. You got an operating system. What's so bad about that?
Your phone
that?
Works,
I'll play
right?
devil's advocate on this one. So if they release an update to all these phones and they haven't tested all of them properly, which will take a long freaking time because they're offering way too many phones, I think, because there's like Verizon's got a slew of Android devices, and as does every other carrier, if they have to take every call for something that doesn't work on their lowest-end crappy phone, like this tiny thing that only costs, you know, they give away for free, with like when you sign up for a credit card or something, then it becomes a bottleneck because when you're trying to contact them about something important, like, hey, why am I being charged for something? They're like, oh, well, right now we have to deal with this guy on his LG Optimus. Like, this thing really isn't
working. That's why the iPhone's been such a nightmare for them because they push out the updates all at once and then they have all these problems.
People complain to Apple when there's a problem.
Actually, I think Apple works closely with the carriers to make sure they get the testing. And that's what Google announced at I.O.
Right.
We're going to try to get this stuff earlier so that people can do the testing and they don't have that excuse to fall back on.
No, I still think they hate the customers. That was just...
I think it's not that they hate them. It's just they're like, what? Customers? But they're paying us now, right? Did I fall asleep? Did they stop paying us?
Didn't
no,
our involvement
us.
End when we got
sure
them
be
to
fine.
Sign up with no, this
I think
phone.
You're right, Justin. I don't think it's a malicious plan.
No.
I think it's more of a like, do we need to... You know, I've got 17 things on my list to do. That one's really not.
Exactly.
And,
and like two of them involve arugula.
I got 17 problems and your ice cream sandwich ain't one.
Yes, exactly.
Email from Azadine. He's the guy who wrote in before about Google Maps already being available as a labs project when they made Google Maps offline for everybody. He says it seems the same as before, except for one feature. It's not available as widely. Before, when it was a Labs feature, you could cache any region of the world. Now it's limited to certain countries. The list is quite long, but has the curious exception of Spain, which now prevents me from using it for the duration of my studies, since the map I cached previously deleted itself after 30 days. I'm not sure why these limitations have been put in place, but this seems a step backwards to me. So when they made it
good point
widely available, somehow some license agreement kicked in and they removed the Spanish apps. And Azadine was the guy's like, hey, I've been using this Labs feature for a long time in Spain. And now he's
That sucks.
Yeah, that does suck.
Email from Alan Pratt. He says he sees an ulterior motive to Microsoft's cheap Windows 8 digital upgrade. Besides getting people off of Windows XP, they'll be able to harvest millions of people's personal information.
Dun, dun, dun!
That's actually what the email says, too. It says, Jerry, make a sound. I've always been a retail purchaser of computers and Windows licenses, and Microsoft has never known my name or what software I buy and use. But if everybody has to register with them using personal information to buy the update and then limit you to getting software only through their app store, like Apple threatens to do, they'll have a detailed database of customers and their behavior like they've never had before, whether it's this or iTunes or the Google Play App Store. You don't own your computer anymore. They own you. Alan, that's very depressing.
Well, Alan, that's true of anything you buy online. Anything. Yeah. So the question is, do you put the heat on to make sure that they aren't abusing the information that they have to collect and that they're not collecting any more information than they absolutely have to do the purchase? Because you know what? I want to buy my operating system online. I don't want to have to go buy a box and stick it in my drive. And when I go to Office Max and buy the box like I used to, they get all kinds of information from me as well. So it's not like you were free of somebody collecting your information before, but you bring up a good point, which is you need to put the pressure on and make sure, hey, if we're going to do this, you're not going to abuse the privilege. So it's a good point to bring up. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks everybody who submitted stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. We look at it every day when we put the lineup together. So even if you don't have time to submit a story, go in there and vote. Let us know what stories you'd like to have us discuss. We do pay attention to those votes and those submissions. Thank you, Justin Robert Young, for coming in.
Yes, it's always it's great to be here. Now that I'm up in the Northern California area, I'm excited to be around. I mean, we do NSFW, or at least I do NSFW live from the Twit studios now, and it's always great to be here.
And I'm looking forward to this weekend's FSL tonight with
you. Yeah. Yeah. We know we're so if you don't know, me and Tom do a podcast called FSL Tonight. If you don't know what it is, then really just start listening. And if you're not delighted by it in the first 5 minutes, just turn it off.
It's fantasy sports. Less about sports, more about wizards and Vulcans.
Yeah. And Klingons. No, the Klingons are gone.
Klingons, yeah, they got No, they're still there. Yeah.
They're still there. Yeah. Anyway, so check that out. And then, itricks.com, Weird Things Podcast. And now I'm working for The Go Game. So if you run a company and you would like, to hire us, go to thegogame.com.
Wow. Anything else? Towards
I'm trying to get lunch later. So if anybody is in the Venom area.
just Twitter him. He's a... Yeah. Justin R. Young.
I'm at Schwood on Twitter.
Schwood on Twitter. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back again tomorrow with an all-new show starring Darren Kitchen and Nicole Lee as our guests. We'll see you then.